Members and guests should take the appropriate seats. We'll get started here. So. Welcome to the Monday version of the Transportation Policy and Finance Committee. The meeting has come to order. We do have a quorum, and the clerk will note the roll. In your packet, members, there is the minutes from the last meeting. I haven't seen them prior to this, but would someone like to move that we approve the minutes? Representative Biskins?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you for the motion. The minutes are before us. Comments, questions? Representative Biskins?
Not to the minutes, Mr. Chair, but as soon as we approve them, I do have a question.
Well, fine. Thanks. Seeing no further discussion, all in favor signify by aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. The minutes are approved. Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, you know, we've been together now for well over a calendar year, and you get to know all the faces around the table. Mr. Chair, I do notice that there is one new and different face around the table. Perhaps this person could introduce themselves.
Oh, dear. Thank you for catching that. Our friend Nancy has been promoted, demoted, or something. Representative Hornstein, you're the lead on the DFL side. Would you like to introduce the new member that's assisting your team?
Well, we have a thank you, Mr. Chair. Elizabeth Mandelman is our new researcher for the House DFL Caucus on Transportation, and she's worked many years here at the House and has been involved a lot in education issues. So this is a new area for her, but a very quick study. And do you want to say a few words,
Elizabeth?
I don't really have a few words. I'm excited to work for this committee. It's a new issue area for me. I've done education with Representative Greiling for the past 6 years, so this is something new, and I'm excited.
Good deal. Well, welcome to the committee, and we trust you'll take good care of our DFL friends. Thank you. Nice catch, Representative Biskins. Appreciate that. First bill up, members, once you've turned your cell phones off or silenced your ringers, we'll invite Mr. Erdahl, Representative Erdahl, to the DOS on House Bill 1948. And House Bill 1948 has to be referred to the Committee on Taxes. Would someone like to move House Bill 1948 to the committee?
So moved.
Benson moves this one, and it will be referred to the Committee on Taxes. Representative Erdahl, welcome to the committee.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good to be here today. I have a simple little bill.
Don't ever say that. Yeah.
All of my bills are simple little bills. Not the biggest thing. Right, this one, House File 1948, came to me from a constituent who was an active duty serviceman overseas, and bought a car, and then came back had it shipped back to Minnesota, and then had to pay sales tax on the car. And what this bill does, it exempts from the first, or after $25,000 in value, it exempts the purchase from Minnesota sales tax. It's a one time only, so you can't open up your own little, you know, used car dealership over there or whatever. And basically, that's the bill. I should add this, estimated that maybe 30 people a year this will impact, so $30,000-$40,000.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl. I should note, members, there is a fiscal note for this bill. As you can imagine, there might be some sales tax that wouldn't be collected in the highway fund. That fiscal note is out being copied as we speak. It will be distributed in a few moments.
I'm not surprised.
Waiting for that. Are there questions for Representative Erdahl or questions to the bill? Representative Hausman.
We may know this when we get the fiscal note, but though he anticipates 30 now, when there's an exception built into law, do we assume that that could grow?
Representative Erdahl, you want to take a guess at that, an educated guess?
I don't anticipate any real growth. I don't think that, at least my constituent didn't know. He assumed that he would have an exemption when he sent his car over here. He was very surprised to find that he had to pay a sales tax. I don't believe that there are great numbers of people that are trying to buy cars overseas and then send them over here.
Follow up? Representative Morrow.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, you might be able to give me some guidance on who would be the appropriate person to ask, whether it's Department of Revenue, whether it's DVS. I have a question about a program by an auto manufacturer where people go overseas, buy their vehicle, drive it around a test track, come back. And I'm not sure, I'm looking for guidance of whether that's a DVS question, whether that's a Department of Revenue question, and I'm trying to figure out how that interrelates with this.
I doubt that it does, but we do have DVS here. I don't think we have revenue in the room. I'm looking to see if revenue
we
people
do, actually.
Are leaping to their feet. But Ms. McCormick is certainly okay. Here and has been very conversant with that program. Ms. McCormick, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, Pat McCormick, the Director of Driver and Vehicle Services. And, I'm not really familiar. We have put a fiscal note together that I think you're receiving right now.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, if I might ask the question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, without trying to give a commercial, I understand, for example, that Volvo, if one flies over to Sweden, picks up the vehicle, drives the vehicle, one could drive the vehicle through Europe, one could drive the vehicle around a test track, but as long as you've driven the vehicle is shipped back to the United States, and my understanding is one of the benefits is it's an avoidance of paying taxes on the vehicle because it was used overseas. So I guess my question, Mr. Chair, is for Ms. McCormick. Is the bill before us any different than what is already being done, and do we need the bill? So I guess the question is first for Ms. McCormick. Is she familiar with this Volvo program, and how does it differ from what we're seeing in the bill?
Ms. McCormick, are you aware of this program, and are people taking advantage of that? Does this exist? Are you aware of its existence?
Mr. Chair, I'm not aware of that specific program. That wasn't something we took into consideration in terms of our fiscal note. What we have heard that sometimes service members purchase a vehicle tax-free in another country and have the vehicle licensed to a dealership in Minnesota. And the only one that we've heard that would lead to something like a partial tax exemption. But we don't have anything. That was just something we heard in discussions with the Department of Military Affairs. So that isn't something that we had been aware of when we were trying to get what we thought was an estimate about how many people this might impact.
Representative Erdahl, your bill is only to military, active-duty military.
Active-duty military personnel.
So this would not apply to me if I wanted to go to Sweden and drive a Volvo and bring it back then. So this is only active.
To you, Mr. Chair, we could make an exception, but generally, no.
I can just see ethical practice getting all that. Follow-up, Representative Morrow.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm not going to pursue this further because I know this bill is going to taxes, but I'm looking at the Volvo overseas delivery website right here where a purchase of Volvo, get a vacation. Two round-trip tickets, hotel, savings on the sticker price, free shipping. I just want to understand if taxes are included in that and if we already have a law that allows people to do what we're trying to achieve here. I'm not asking for the answer. I'm asking the author of the bill to look into this and find out before it goes to taxes.
Receive that message, Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Morrow, certainly I'll look into the Volvo plan. But, you know, there are a lot of other automobiles other than the Volvo. I mean, there might be the Chevy Camel. It's shaped like this, and it runs on water.
Representative Nelson, you're next on the list.
I don't know what. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know what to say after that, but
Representative Eakin, then.
I guess the question I have, I got a couple questions about the logistics of this, and the first question I have has to do more with. And maybe Ms. McCormick can help answer this, and maybe Representative Erdahl is going to have to find out later on. But how are other states handling this? I mean, I'm thinking of my brother. When my brother was stationed overseas in Germany and he came back to the United States, he actually purchased a car over there and bought it from somebody that was leaving and being shipped out from Germany someplace else. And there's a lot of that goes on. I guess how is this being handled elsewhere? I guess that I would think the cost of shipping it would be almost more than what the tax would be on it, and I don't know what benefits would be from buying it over there and then shipping it here. And I guess I know there are some concerns. I know some cars that are sold in some other countries that don't have our emission standards, when you bring a car over here, you got to pay to bring those up to our emission standards if you want to drive them here. So I guess, do you know how this is handled in other states? I guess is the basic question.
Ms. McCormick, Representative Bertle.
Mr. Chair and Representative Nelson, we haven't done any research on this because we just received it last Friday. But certainly that's something that we can check out through our AMVA, the Motor Vehicle Administrators Association, and see if we can get any feedback from other states and provide that to Representative Erdahl.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And a request, Representative Morrow, would you send me the link to the Volvo, and I'll check that out. Basically, without trying to get something very complicated here, this is just a request from a constituent, because this is the situation that he encountered. He was an active duty serviceman. He sent his car over here that he needed. He was required, basically, to have an automobile to get around because of the duty that he had. And when it came to Minnesota, he had to pay a sales tax on it. And he thought that that was not right, and that is the genesis of what this is.
This bill did come to us from Veterans Division.
It certainly did.
It did. Thank you. So, in fact, members, the next two, this bill and the next one we're going to hear are re-referrals to us from the Veterans Division.
Follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Representative Nelson.
I guess that this raises another question to Ms. McCormick. How do we handle, say, I purchase a car in, say, I'm working down in Nebraska, and I purchase a car in Nebraska, and I drive it back up here and then get plates for Minnesota. Do I end up paying sales tax on that car that I bought in Nebraska?
Ms. McCormick?
Mr. Chair and Representative Nelson, it depends on how long you're using the car before you come to the state. The law, I don't have the exact statute in front of me, but the law allows for a certain amount of time that you've bought the vehicle. If you're going to get it licensed in our state, then you'd be paying the taxes on it. But if you'd had it before, and it also depends on the value of the vehicle, too.
Okay, follow-up, Representative Nelson.
No.
No, Representative Beacon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I was wondering, as far as the countries that these vehicles are being purchased in, if they have to pay any tax there. Now, I know it varies, I'm sure, from country to country, but my guess is if they're paying tax there, it's a pretty substantial sales tax given the tax structure of the European countries and some of the countries that our military officers are serving in, or servicemen are serving in. This constituent that you have, Representative Erdahl, did they have to pay a sales tax there before it was brought here to the United States?
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Eakin, I didn't ask that question directly, but I do assume that they did.
Okay, and I don't know if Ms. McCormick, thank you, Mr. Chair, just generally, if that's the case, you made reference to buying automobiles tax-free without sales tax in Europe. Does that occur in some countries, or do they generally have to pay a tax in the European country before it's brought to the States?
Ms. McCormick, can you answer that question?
Mr. Chair and Representative, I don't have that information. We can check it out for you to see if I can provide it with you, but I don't know what the sales tax provisions are in other countries.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Erdahl, does this proposed legislation only affect servicemen who are in combat zones, or is this any serviceman operating overseas?
Representative Erdahl.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Biskins, any active duty overseas personnel, so that could be a combat zone or not.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Erdahl and members of this committee. Then I do have some grave concerns with this piece of legislation, because if I, as an educator, went over to a Department of Defense school and taught on a military campus, I'm in as much harm's way as any other person there, and yet I don't believe that I would get this same privilege. The camel accepted, of course. I probably could get the same with the camel, but as far as this exception, and it does indeed give me concern, pause for concern. You know, I would acknowledge that the member serving in the military is providing a very important function to our country and our society, but I don't want to put a value on which is more important, that member serving in a non-combat zone or the educator who is teaching that member's child in a non-combat zone.
Representative Bertol.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Biskins, I'm not going to try to greatly dispute that, other than to say that I do believe that an active duty military serviceman has a different level of commitment than a teacher. It's a different level.
Okay, Representative Leidiger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to talk to this from really the perspective of the military person who's overseas. Now, I'm relying on a lot of memory. It's been over 10 years since I was in the military, but I was in there for 23 years. Remember, a lot of these guys, they go in, they don't have vehicles. They're overseas. They may be at sea on the 200-some-plus ships that are out there deployed. They don't have vehicles. When they go into the service, whether the Army, Navy, whatever the service might be, they go overseas. They have to be ready to go whether it be combat or whether it just be go to different duty stations, and they're dissuaded from really owning vehicles. So when it comes time for a fella to a military person to get out of the service, and it may be, you know, after the first term, or maybe he's upped a couple of different times, or he may be retired, and it's time for him to look for a place to come home to. This is an incentive. This becomes an incentive for this particular bill, becomes an incentive for this person to come back to Minnesota, because there are a lot of states that they can go back to, and a lot of people look at, okay, where's the friendly military states that I can go back home to? Those states that have these kinds of bills in place, these kinds of incentives, you know, they help the person make that decision. You know, I want to come back home to Minnesota, and we want to encourage that. But there are programs that are out there for military people, and they generally deal with new vehicles. So just envision yourself 4 years at sea, and it's time for you to get out, and you want to have a vehicle when you get home. And so there are programs that the manufacturers themselves introduce specifically as a benefit for these people overseas, that they can buy them direct from the manufacturers, and they usually have them shipped by the manufacturers at cost, and so a vehicle is waiting for these military people when they get back here. So all this bill is doing is exempting the first $25,000 from sales tax, from Minnesota sales tax. So, I mean, let's look at this from the military members that are out there floating around or, you know, at sea or at the various different duty stations, and let's put this on the books. This is an incentive for these members to come back to Minnesota. Remember, they're highly trained people. We want them back in this state. They become very good, productive members of our society. So I support the bill.
Representative Erdahl, are you familiar with any other state in the union that has a provision like what you're proposing to create in House Bill 1948?
Mr. Chairman, no, I am not, but I've written it down in my list of notes here, and I'm sure that the department here can help me figure that out, too.
Thank you. Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just Representative Leidinger, I'm okay with this as a benefit, but what's going on, for example, is that, let's just take Europe. Europe charges a VAT of 25% on a purchase, but you don't have to pay the VAT if you drive the car and bring it back to the United States within a certain period. I believe it's 6 months. So I'm just trying to understand the interrelationship of this law with other laws. It surprises me, as Representative Eakin says, if our servicemen and women are paying the sales tax in Europe or elsewhere, I don't understand why they'd be paying a second sales tax here. And so I'm asking Representative Erdahl to be ready at the tax committee to explain how this bill interacts with existing U.S. and Minnesota tax policy and with the taxes they may be already paying elsewhere. I'm just asking for an understanding of that interrelationship, because it may be that some of our service members are paying twice, which would be wrong. I'm just trying to find out.
Good point. Representative Erdahl, do you have any further comments or anything?
We will address the questions raised by Representative Morrow for the Tax Committee.
Thank you for your careful attention to the comments of this committee. I think you've noted the concerns. Further discussion to the bill? Seeing none, Representative Benson renews his motion. The bill passed. And we refer to the Committee on Taxes. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? No. The motion prevails. The bill is on its way to Tax Committee. Representative, thank you.
Thank you.
Next bill on the calendar for the, excuse me, the next bill on our committee agenda is House Bill 1821. Representative Detmer has another bill that's been re-referred from the Veterans Affairs Committee. And we do have the fiscal note toasty warm off the press and ready to go. Representative Detmer needs someone to move the House Bill 1821 recommended that passed and re-referred to the Committee on Government Operations and Elections. Representative Shemansky,
Mr. Chairman, I move House File 1821 re-recommended to pass and sent to Government Operations.
Thank you. The bill is in front of us. Representative Detmer, you also have an amendment.
That's right, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the A3 amendment. So it's just a technical amendment. I'd like to.
Representative Shemansky moves the A3 amendment.
And I'd like to have Mr. Burroughs talk about the A3 amendment.
Please. Mr. Burroughs.
Mr. Chair and members, the bill before you is addressing a section of law that is also being changed in another House file, which is the Transportation Policy Omnibus that this committee passed out a number of days ago. And this amendment is intended to align, from a technical standpoint, the structure of changes made in that bill with the changes being made in this bill. So the vast majority of the language is a repeat of what's already in the bill. It's moving essentially a paragraph into a subdivision to match what's going on in House File 1284, the policy omnibus. There is one substantive change, which is to match language that's also in House File 1284 regarding prime contractors being required to demonstrate good faith efforts to regarding goals for subcontractors.
And that would be lines 1.10 to 1.22 then? Because I noticed 1.14 refers to the prime contractors you just mentioned.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, 1.14 is where the new that new language is. The rest repeats, okay, with some minor technical changes, repeats a paragraph that's also being removed in the amendment.
Members, I should point out this amendment did not make the 12-hour rule, and I'm not sure exactly why that was, except I know Mr. Burris was working on technical changes to align this bill, 1821, with the bill that is now in local government committee and will be heard, I think, on Thursday, if I'm not mistaken. Representative Nelson and Hornstein will be there to hear me present that bill. Questions to the amendment before
yes.
we move on? Representative Champion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Burris, so just so that I'm clear, currently, the language that was that is in the omnibus bill is discretionary. Is that right? And if so, how does this amendment change the nature of the target group businesses and as it appeared, and how it deals with other target group businesses as well? So can you explain that?
Mr. Chair and members, I might back up a step. The essence of the change being made in House File 1284, the Transportation Policy Omnibus, goes more towards the targeted group business program. However, the section of statutes that is being changed there is designed, it's structured in a way where the targeted group business program and the veteran-owned small business program are dealt with as two programs sort of dealt with within the same section, so that basically all the provisions under current law applies to both programs. And the changes in House File 1284 regard some clarifications to the process that and are oriented more towards the targeted group business program. The change in this bill amends that structure, and it pulls out the veteran-owned small business program to be separate subdivisions, so that a lot of the language doesn't refer to one program and or the other program, and instead deals with them somewhat more separately. From a substantive standpoint, there is somewhat of a policy difference between what's proposed in House File 1284 and what's proposed in House File 1821. And that difference regards, one of the components of that difference is on the subcontracting provision. And in the policy omnibus in House File 1284, it's permissive language that allows the Commissioner of Transportation to set goals for prime contractors regarding subcontractors who are veteran-owned small businesses or who are targeted group businesses. So that's permissive language under current law as well as under the changes being made in House File 1284. In House File 1821, the bill before you right now, that provision is changed to be mandatory with respect to the veteran-owned small businesses.
Representative Champion.
Just for clarity, so if this amendment is adopted, if it's a veteran-owned business, then if there's a project that MnDOT is doing, then it would be required to set goals for veteran-owned businesses, but not be required to set goals for other targeted group businesses. Is that right?
Mr. Chair, Representative Champion, that is right. That's also the provision that exists under first engrossment of the bill. So the amendment doesn't change that. The amendment has that language, but that same distinction exists in the current version of the bill.
So in other words, whether we adopt the amendment or not, that distinction is in House File 1821, whether we amend it or not.
Mr. Chair, that's right.
Representative Champion.
Mr. Chair, I have some grave concerns about this amendment, and even though we would say by adopting this amendment or not doesn't change the substantive nature of the original bill, it does, because originally if we look at the bill and those who agreed to it or not, originally AGC, MnDOT opposed it, and that there was some discussion around amended language that did not include any discussion with me or others who are very, you know, interested in this area of law, and just so that we could all be on the same page. With that being said, this particular amendment also did not meet the deadline, and the whole reason for the deadline is so that we all could receive notice in enough time so that I could have also reached out to the chief author as well as the other key stakeholders. And for that particular reason, Your Honor, I'm in court again. Mr. Chair, you look like a judge, Chair. Let me just say.
You've been with me this summer. And we were.
Yeah, absolutely. And so for that reason, technically, I believe that we should not take up this amendment, that it would be a gross misjustice of the integrity of this process.
Thank you for your comments. Mr. Burris, you feel compelled to comment to that? Is obviously you're looking at me.
Mr. Chair, I do feel somewhat honor-bound to note that the past deadline introduction of this amendment is because of me and the timing of reviewing bills and preparing technical suggestions.
You are at a very busy time of year right now. We recognize that and appreciate your service. Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just so that I'm clear on this, and Mr. Burris, I noticed Bill came from Veterans Services here in Transportation, going to GovOps. On the amendment, numerous times the word the commissioner is being referenced. Is that the commissioner of Transportation, or is there another commissioner we're talking about here?
That was directed to Mr. Burris, did you say?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Burris, thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Biskins, yes, it is Commissioner of Transportation. There are some reporting provisions that I believe reference the Commissioner of Administration, but in those cases, it's when it's just Commissioner, it's Transportation, and it's fully written out if Administration is being referred to.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hausman.
Mr. Chair, if I'm guessing, it does appear that at least some members of the audience who are maybe seeing it for the first time are having some discussion. Do we have people who might want from the audience who might want to comment on the amendment?
When we get to that point, yes, I would thank you for reminding me of that. Representative Hornstein.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And just so that we're all kind of have a roadmap in terms of where we're going here. Seems that we have people here. We could hear the bill, there's and discuss it, and seems like there's some concern about how this would affect the 1284, and it seems like we could just hear the bill, let it percolate for a while, and then come back to take a vote in another day or something like that. It just feels to me that Representative Champion has raised some concerns and. It's just a thought. I mean, ultimately, it's up to you or the committee to decide. But, I mean, I'd love to hear the bill. I think it's an important bill. We have witnesses here. We have folks that are looking at the amendment. But it feels a little premature to kind of move it today. So just a thought, Mr. Chair.
And thank you for the suggestion. I know we're always trying to be helpful and do good work here. Members, what I'm going to do is ask Representative Szymanski to withdraw this amendment. It strikes the chair that this amendment, technical in nature, it could probably be applied in the next committee well.
Yeah, that's fine.
Or a committee stop after that. It doesn't have to come on here. And again, we thank you, Mr. Burris, for your good work and for explaining the amendment. But Representative Szymanski, I'm going to ask you to withdraw the A3 amendment.
Mr.
And
Chairman.
We'll just go to the bill as it stands. If you would explain it. Representative Detmer.
Yeah.
You have a few testifiers, I believe, that want to speak to the bill.
Yes, Mr. Chair, and just a little background.
Please.
Again, I know Governor Dayton has made statements that we want to make Minnesota a friendly place for our veterans, and especially veteran small businesses. And I also talked with Adjutant General Nash. He spoke last week over at the Armory regarding the unemployment rate that we have in veterans today. It's just unacceptable. It ranges anywhere from 12% to 22% unemployment for our men and women that are coming back. Right now we have approximately 3,000 soldiers in uniform serving overseas from Minnesota. And General Nash mentioned that we really need to do a lot to help these men and women come back, secure jobs, education, and so forth. And also I met with Commissioner Shelato with Veterans Affairs, and he supports anything we can do to help our veterans, our men and women coming back to Minnesota with a job and employment. This bill has also been vetted very, very closely with the Small Business Caucus, which is a bipartisan caucus of small businesses. This has come through that caucus. And I brought with me today Ralph Donay. He represents veterans organizations. Would like to speak on behalf of the bill, too.
Mr. Donay, before you speak, I actually have to hear Representative Szymanski say the magic words for the tape. Representative Szymanski.
Chairman Beard, I recall them. Withdraw the motion to accept the A3 amendment on 1821.
And Mr.
Thank
Chair,
you for housekeeping we had to do. So,
and Mr. Chair and committee, in the Veterans Affairs Committee, we tabled this bill, and I met with MnDOT. I met with their representatives on the civil rights part of MnDOT. They came in, and we sat down, went word for word through this bill, making sure that we had everything the way we wanted it to present it to this transportation committee. So we spent several hours going over this this language, and then it was passed out of veterans.
Thank you for your efforts, and Mr. Representative Detmer. Mr. Donay, welcome to the committee. If you identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Ralph Donay. I'm the chairman of the United Veterans Legislative Council of Minnesota. We have 34 veterans organizations that come together to discuss veterans issues within the state and our legislation. As a representative of that council for several years, we have worked with MnDOT on this language to this bill, met numerous times over the last two or three years with several different people from different sections of MnDOT to get the verbiage of this bill worked out to where we felt that it could really help small veteran-owned businesses. This isn't something that just popped up overnight yesterday. Like I say, this has been worked on for several years, and our council fully endorses Representative Detmer's bill.
Thank you, Mr. Donay, for your testimony. Questions for this testifier? Mr. Donay?
One last thing, sir. Mm-hmm. Mr. Tittle, who's here today, worked with us on numerous occasions getting this bill in line with everything that we felt that would be needed to get it through MnDOT and to make all parties concerned happy with this bill, sir. Thank you.
You're welcome. Mr. Tittle, are you in the
Yes.
Before you do, I see a hand here. Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the testifier, mm-hmm. You know, the thing we struggle with here is, and we've been on this subject for a number of years, is there are a number of minority groups that feel they've never been represented in the workforce or have had sort of an equal opportunity. And so this is not the first. We've had had people before us. In this economic time, there's even more weight to that. And I think the thing that that we struggle with in this bill is do we run the risk of choosing one unrepresented group over and above the other unrepresented groups that have fought for years to somehow get into the workforce? And I wonder if you can help me with it, as you've had discussions about that, how you see it from your perspective. Would there really be a desire on the part of the groups that met around the table that you were talking to that that particular group should be sorted out and sort of elevated among other minority groups that perhaps are unrepresented in the workforce?
Mr. Donay.
Mr. Chair, Representative, this thing about the other minority groups has been brought up and discussed back and forth for the past several years. I'm not a duty expert on it. I believe possibly Mr. Tittle can give you a little bit more information on that as he works, I'm pretty sure, in that section of MnDOT and can probably give you a more distinct answer on that, ma'am.
Follow-up? Representative Nelson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess my question is for Mr. Burris, because as he was explaining or answering Representative Champion's question, I guess I want to make sure I heard it correctly. I know the bill we worked on, the omnibus bill, we included the minorities, all the minority groups, disadvantaged businesses, it's easy for me to say, and the veterans all as equal partners or equal level of a concern or a preference, I guess is the word I'm looking for. And what I heard Mr. Burris say when he explained this is that the bill, let alone the amendment to the bill, but the bill itself would actually put the veterans groups above everybody else and give them a higher preference than the rest of them. And I mean, did I hear that correctly, Mr. Burris?
Mr. Burris, as you're explaining that, would you clarify for the committee that the targeted group business enterprise is actually for all funds that come and flow from the federal government, and that the veterans group, I believe, is only for funds that have no federal funds, because there's a specific federal prohibition against carving out veterans owned businesses.
That's right.
If they're part of the federal highway if federal highway money touches it, this only applies to projects where only state or local money is involved. Can you speak to both Representative Nelson's questions and my clarifying comment?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, Mr. Chair, I'll take that first comment, your comment first. The way I would express it is that both the Targeted Group Business Program and the Veteran-Owned Small Business Program are procurement programs awarding preferences for contracts in which there is only state funding. So it's non-federally funded contracts. The DBE program, Disadvantaged Business Enterprises, is the federally funded. So that's a distinct, similar, but it's a distinct program. To Representative Nelson's question, the distinction between the omnibus bill and the provisions in there and this bill rest on a permissive versus mandatory language. Under the omnibus bill, the commissioner is allowed to provide up to 6% preference in bids for construction contracts, and that preference applies to both targeted group businesses as well as veteran-owned small businesses. The change being made in this bill, House File 1821, requires the 6% preference to be applied for veteran-owned small businesses in contract bids.
Follow-up, Representative?
So, Mr. Chair, I guess that answers my question, is that, yes, they're being given a higher preference over, as Representative Hausman said, all the other groups that have fought to have that preference in the past. So they're making these people more equal than everybody else. And I guess that concerns me. I mean, I support our veterans and everything else. And I have a son who's a veteran. I have a brother who's a veteran. And it's just that this year, we're giving them more preference. We have to set aside, if I heard that right, we have to set aside 6% for them. And the commissioner may set aside 6% for all the other groups. So I think we're giving them more for preference, where the language that we passed that was in the omnibus bill basically put them in that group with everybody else as far as having that 6%. So, I mean, the way I hear that is that we're now going to have to set aside 12%, and 6% is going to go for the veterans, and the other 6% is going to go for all the other groups.
Mr. Burke, did I hear you correctly that there's a difference between DBE and TGB? The DBE is a federal program, and that's mandatory, correct? TGB is where we've given the discretion on state-funded projects. So let me be sure I heard that correctly.
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure about the mandatory aspect of the DBE program, but it is federal, and
there
both
are no veterans allowed. Veterans groups are not allowed to participate in that program, correct?
Mr. Chair, I don't believe they are, but I haven't looked at the details of that program.
Mr. Chair,
comment on that.
Mr. Chair, you're right. The veterans groups, small businesses, are not allowed to be involved in the DBE program. That's federal funds. We cannot. The veterans groups cannot. Small businesses cannot contract any of those contracts. Only state-funded contracts would veterans be able to participate in.
And that would be the gist of this House File 1821 should have passed?
That's correct.
Thank you. Members, before I take any more questions or comments, let's let Mr. Tittle from the Minnesota Department of Transportation speak to the bill and express his thoughts, and then Representative Gauthier, you're up next. Mr. Tittle, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee. On behalf of the Department of Transportation, I would like to thank you for the opportunity to work with Representative Detmer and his staff on this bill. I am the Deputy Director for the Office of Civil Rights, and have been so for the past 5 months. And I will be currently responsible for the veteran program, as well as the TGB program. In general, we support the amendments that were presented, although we recognize some areas that presented some conflicts, including the may versus the must situations that we're currently in discussion with. However, we believe that they could be easily remedied through conversation. As Representative Detmer mentioned, we went through it line by line and are prepared to do so with the other bill, with the TGB program as well. It's important to note that MnDOT established a collaborative back in 2008, which is comprised of 8 different types of stakeholders to include contractors, associations, community members, as well as TGB businesses. And it also comprises of 11 different project teams. These are project teams that are comprised of groups such as Results Transparency, DBE groups. TGB is actually one of the project teams that talk about the issues related around this particular bill. MnDOT has also supported the veteran program by submitting an RFP to the community recently and have received a number of candidates, and we will be taking a look at those veteran contractors for outreach and such during this current week. The contractor will support this bill and report to our agency the temperature of the veteran businesses and the environment in which they work. Much of this work will become the data referenced in this bill, reported to the transportation chair every even number year. In fact, we will review the proposals this week, as I mentioned earlier. Again, I must state that it's an honor as a U.S. Army veteran for over 10 years to work on behalf of Minnesota veterans on this bill. MnDOT supports House File 1821 as amended and is fortunate to focus on increasing inclusion among veteran businesses on MnDOT state projects. We appreciate your support with this important legislation, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Tittle. Welcome to the committee, and I think this is the first time we've had you in front of this committee, if I'm not mistaken.
That's correct.
I should have had you identify yourself as you began your testimony for the tape. You'll get used to that, because I'm sure you'll be back several more times in other capacities.
Yes.
Representative Gauthier, you were next up on the list, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess I'm looking for clarification from either the chair or Representative Champion, but it just seems to me that we just had to place small targeted group businesses back into the omnibus bill because MnDOT dropped it in the Senate portion last year, and so we just did that last week, and it's not law at this point. Is that correct?
Representative Gauthier, it was actually in the House Transportation omnibus bill. The Senate never had a hearing on it. And we were going to try to have them do the hearing and take it up in conference committee. We never had the opportunity for conference committee because of other issues on the floor of the House. So we reassembled the transportation omnibus bill, put it in, and the Senate did hear it this year, and they have a version in there. In fact, I think they have the identical language, if I'm not mistaken, in their Senate file. So,
thank you, Mr. Chair. I do recall being in a meeting with MnDOT and Representative Champion in the last days of session, and being told, quite frankly, that they were going to drop it by MnDOT because it was considered controversial by somebody. So having said that, what I guess I, you know, this is not an anti-veteran thing. It's trying to have a level playing field, you know, and we're looking at minority populations with official unemployment rates around 19-20% and unofficial rates probably double, and I know that the governor has put out a call to hire veterans, but I also believe that he's put out a call to be fair to minority groups in our state practices here. So you have us in a quandary. You know, you're asking us, Representative Detmer, to pick, and I find that extremely difficult. I would be more comfortable if the language was the same as it was in the omnibus bill. Whether it may be may or must, I'm okay with must for targeted small targeted group businesses too. But at this point, we have this quandary, and I'm not quite sure how we work that out. And find it extremely difficult. You know, when I go home and look at my constituents, I have a lot of veterans, I have a lot of minority people in my district, and how do I explain that you're asking me to pick one over the other, and it's extremely difficult.
Representative Detmer?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I got a story I should just tell the committee here.
Please.
3 years ago, I had a Vietnam War veteran come into my office in a wheelchair, missing two legs, on oxygen, and he, owner of a great trucking company up in Forest Lake where I live, Eagle Trucking, and he was having problems getting contracts, you know, because the veterans don't qualify for any federal money contracts here in Minnesota under the DBE program. And there really wasn't much I could do for him, and his health was failing, and he wanted to, you know, hang on to his company and also hang on to his employees that he was employing, all the drivers and the belly dumpers and so forth. And so finally his health was to the point he turned his company over to his wife. Okay, now they applied for the DBE program, and it took several weeks for this to come about. Well, he passed away. And a week later, he gets the word from MnDOT that they were accepted in the DBE program. It was too late. The bank already had taken the company. He laid off all of his employees. And then it was about 4 weeks later, I get a call from his wife, and she gets a call from Department of Revenue, and she owed $10,000 back sales taxes, because they had changed the policy where when you hauled gravel and so forth for roads versus bike trails, they changed the policy and you had to pay your sales tax on the bike trails, where you didn't have to before. They weren't aware of it. And so I sat on the meeting with the Department of Revenue and we worked things out. What I'm saying here is that the veterans that are coming home want to start businesses. They paid many of them paid big prices for being away from their families, and many of them with injuries coming back. They have some skill sets that we want to keep here in Minnesota, and this bill would allow them to have some preferences on state-funded contracts, not federal, but state-funded contracts. And I just wanted to share that story with you because it's close to me. This is why I brought this forward for the veterans-owned businesses. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, follow-up?
Representative Gottlieb, follow-up.
Representative Detman, don't... I agree with you that there should be some... All I'm saying is there should be a level playing field with the veterans and other minority groups. Because clearly we have failed more than one population. Mm-hmm. And I've been very supportive to the legislation for veterans, homeless vets in particular. I support the governor's call to give tax credits to hire veterans and all those things. All I'm saying is when I can't do anything about the federal money, but I can certainly say that equity should be played out here with state money and state contracts with minority groups and veterans. And so that's all I'm trying to say here. Yeah. And we need to get everybody back to work.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Representative Champion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is for Mr. Tittle, who is you are with MnDOT, I understand.
Correct.
And so my question is, around the bill without the amendment, does MnDOT support the bill without the amendment? And secondly, was it the intent of MnDOT when you negotiated this for veterans to have a mandatory preference and for the other minority groups to have a discretionary preference?
Representative Champion, are you talking about today's amendment?
Mr.
Yes.
Chair?
Yes.
Yes. Because as you know, that the amendment that was put forth was withdrawn, so we're talking about the bill in its original form.
Correct. That is correct. We do support the bill as amendment. As I mentioned earlier in my initial conversation, we did recognize some challenges with the MAYS and the MUST. Obviously, we had our folks in the room and we discussed some of the legal ramifications that would have transpired around those. And our attorneys believe it was in our best interest to support them as they are.
Mr. Tittle, to be clear and to members of the committee, the original bill, 1821, was presented to the and referred to the Veterans Division. It was amended in that committee. And is that the bill, Mr. Tittle, that you're, when you speak of the bill as amended, you're referring to it as it came out of the Veterans Division, having been amended there, correct?
Yes, the one that was amended.
Yes.
The way it looks today.
And the way it looks today, because there is an additional amendment that was offered and withdrawn today. Can you speak to that amendment, or is it too new for you?
I believe it's too new for me, sir.
Thank you for your straightforwardness. And we've asked the authors of the bill pass here today to offer that amendment in the next committee, and he may have some more work to do. Bless somebody over there. Thank you. For more questions to this testifier, Representative Hornstein.
Well, no, thanks. Just more, again, on process and maybe to the author. I mean, you know, maybe there's a compromise. You know, it just seems that, you know, Section 2, you know, lines 12 through 18 and then 25 and 26 are the problem areas. I mean, I have no issue with a report and kind of looking at this a little closer, but it's that kind of the must language, the must award up to 6%. And again, I'm not proposing an amendment. I'm not, you know, going to move that you take this out right now. But, you know, it seems like there is a way to kind of get to what you want to get to in terms of calling attention to this problem, making sure that MnDOT's aware of it. There's reports going and information flowing back and forth. But I do agree with Representative Gauthier and Representative Champion and Representative Houseman that once we elevate it to a mandate, it kind of changes the equation. So just a thought, it seems like there's just one paragraph and a couple of other lines that are causing some angst here. But, you know, the rest of it, maybe I'm missing something, but the rest of it doesn't seem untoward to me. So just a thought.
Mr. Tittle, the chair has a question. On the fiscal note we have here, it proposes that this is going to cost the Trunk Highway Fund something. About $103,000 first year. I've noticed you're looking at an additional 1.5 full-time equivalents in your department. Can you tell us how many full-time equivalents are managing that Office of Civil Rights and Office? Well, this is just in the Office of Civil Rights. How many people work there now?
Currently, there are 18 people that work there.
18 FTEs there?
Correct.
And you think it would take 1.5 more if this was to go into effect?
Mr. Chair, first of all, we have one person administering the veterans program right now.
Okay.
Obviously, as we grow this program and focus on different areas, we would require additional manpower or different additional FTEs to administer it.
Thank you. Further questions for this testifier? Is there anyone else? Thank you, Mr. Tittle, for your testimony.
Thank
appreciate
you.
It. And Representative Champion, you were on the list. I'm sorry, I'm missing. Did you want a further comment or question before we move on to other testifiers?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Back to Mr. Tittle. Mr. Tittle, would you be so kind as to look at 2.12 to 2.13? And I want to focus on 2.12 where it says the commissioner must award up to 6% preference in the above bid for specified construction work to veteran-owned businesses. Are you familiar with that language, first of all?
Mr. Kettle?
I am, Representative Champion.
Representative Champion.
And I just want to make sure that I'm clear. Thank you, Mr. Chair. That is your thought that MnDOT supports this language of must, of the term must being used in order to award 6% to veteran-owned businesses. Is that right?
Mr. Tittle?
That is correct.
Representative Champion?
One last question. And is it your understanding that MnDOT also supports this language even though the other target group businesses, people of color and women, the language is discretionary? Is that your understanding?
Mr. Tittle?
No, it's not my understanding. Representative Champion.
So,
Representative Champion.
So, is it your understanding that this language is consistent or is inconsistent with the language from House File 1284?
Mr. Tittle,
I believe it's inconsistent. The way I see it, it does read that there is an advantage for the veteran business.
Thank you for your testimony. Follow up?
One last question.
Representative Champion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So if language says, so do you see a difference when language says must versus shall or may? So do you see that as all the same sort of directive?
Mr. Tittle?
I do see that there's a difference there, Representative Champion. I do.
Representative Detmer, do you hear the line of questioning?
I have heard that, and I think MnDOT could probably talk about really how much in terms of the contracts for state-funded contracts are out there versus if there's $1 of federal funds involved in any one of these contracts that are put out, and if there's $1 federal funds in there, the veterans, small-owned businesses do not qualify for that, where other groups do. So we need to remember that. We're just talking about state contracts.
But to be clear, and we want to clarify that, the where other groups qualify and the veterans don't, if there's even $1,
right.
Does that say must or may or shall?
And
are you aware of that, Representative?
I'm not aware of that.
Mr. Bill, are you aware how that's worded? Because we're at a disadvantage here. We don't have those other bills in front of us at the moment. But
right. I cannot recall at this time, no, sir.
I can't either. We will before the next committee, though, because at least three of us on this committee sit on the next committee, and we'll be asking those questions again, Representative Detmer. Okay? Further questions for this testifier on this issue? Representative Leiter, you're compelled to ask questions for this testifier. Go ahead.
I actually have a comment, and I wouldn't mind if he'd confirm it.
Okay.
Let's look at these veterans. This is the best cross-section of American society. It is the most, it's a melting pot is what we have in the U.S. military. So when you're talking about helping veteran businesses, you're talking about a phenomenal cross-section of people within our society that we're helping. And the military has helped minorities, women. I was in recruiting for 2 years, and I lived in downtown Detroit, and I had the state of Michigan, 70 recruiting stations around the state of Michigan, and we made it a point to bring in people that was a cross-section of that whole society, and I think we did a very good job, and I know that we do that today. So we're helping everybody when we help the veterans. And can you confirm, is it that way today?
Mr. Tittle?
As far as the recruiting of veterans?
Yes.
I think I can speak for the fact that I am a veteran, and I am I'm a representative of that cross-sectionally. Yes, sir. At the same time, I do want to, pose or just respond to a previous question about this bill and how we plan to move forward. As far as MnDOT is concerned, we are prepared to have further discussions about the TGB bill. We are prepared to discuss how we can align that language and those types of things moving forward. So I do want to recognize that that there is a difference between the must and the mays, as Representative Champion has mentioned earlier, and we are prepared to sit down and discuss those moving forward.
Thank you. Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to testify about this bill? Former Representative Severson, if you'd make some concise and enlightening remarks, appreciate that. And anyone else, please identify yourself to the chair and my assistant, and we'll make sure you have a chance for comment as well. Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Identify yourself for the record, please.
Dan Severson, Sauk Rapids.
Good.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And this bill was before our legislative bodies previously. This is an initiative that was brought to the Military Action Group, and as a point of inference or interest, a little background is 1975, when Vietnam was winding down and a lot of the men were coming back, men and women were coming back from battle, there was a direct initiative to begin to undermine some of the veterans' preference provisions that were in the state at the time. And in a meeting with Representative Kahn at the time, it was when I brought this bill up the last time, it was divulged that that was because when those people were coming back, they were taking important jobs that women at that point had been being had been occupying. So there was a desire at the point of the, at that point in time in the legislature to begin to take some of the teeth out of the veterans benefits programs or out of the veterans preference programs. And so there was a backlash that took place then. This is an initiative to kind of get back to some normalcy and some preference for our warfighters who have actually gone out there in under the call of their country, put their lives on the line, and then come back and now are trying to reintegrate into Minnesota culture. That that process brought us a little bit of where we are here today. We've made some good inroads in terms of trying to create some more stepping stones for our veterans to get back into the economy, get back into the job market, but you can see that we're still hurting desperately for our veterans who are in the citizens, soldier side, who are coming from the soldiers, going back to the citizens. We've got a high unemployment rate. This process is one of those. We know that veteran-owned businesses prefer to hire veterans because they have a kinship in that process. And interestingly enough, under this point, the difference between the veterans preference or any initiatives that you as the legislature choose to give as a preference to veterans are legal under the law, where in a targeted business group or those that require some type of compensation under the civil rights require a disparity study. So I just want to make that point that you as the legislature have the prerogative to give this advantage to the veteran. You have the advantage, the ability to say to these veterans, this is a consideration we want to give to you because we understand your service to country, the sacrifices that you're making. And it should not be supposed that this is in competition with the minority groups, but rather that we are acknowledging the performance of the veterans, the sacrifices that they have made to our country and to our state. And that this goes a long way in repairing some of the breach that took place for those Vietnam veterans when they came back and we basically held up our hand and said, thanks for serving, but you know, get along as best you can. We don't want to do that to our current sitting veterans, those who are coming back. We want to give them the advantages that they deserve.
Thank you for testimony. Questions for this testifier? Thank you, Representative Severson. I appreciate your comment.
Thank you, Chairman Beer.
Representative Gauthier, you're on the list here again.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Tittle, first of all, welcome to MnDOT, state of Minnesota. Regardless, I guess what I have is a request of you. Regardless of how this turns out today, you know, Representative Champion and I sat in a meeting, and I believe the commissioner was present when we were told it was too controversial, even discretionary with the TGBs. So I guess my request is that you keep us in the loop if we're going to negotiate language. And I would hope and encourage you that the language would be consistent in both bills. And I don't know if the chair has any intention of bringing it back to see how this meshes or not. So that would be a question for you, I guess, Mr. Chair. But that's my request of you, Mr. Tittle.
Mr. Tittle.
Definitely. We'll keep the committee abreast of any negotiation or any discussions moving forward.
Thank you. Seeing no further discussion, Representative Shemansky moves it, renews his motion that the bill pass be referred to the Committee on Local Government and Elections. All in favor, signify by aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Prevails. The bill is on its way. Representative Detmer, thank you for your attention to the sage advice on this committee and the comments and concerns, and yeah, we'll look forward to seeing you there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee.
House Call 1595, Representative Murdoch. Let's see how complicated we can make manufactured home. Representative Murdoch, as you're having your seat, you need to move this bill and re-refer it to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I would move House File 1595 to
be passed and moved on to Ways and Means.
Thank you, Representative Murdoch. House Bill 1595, please proceed.
I'm not going to say it's a simple bill. That seems to be a kiss of death around here.
Move the table.
And I forgot to address the chair as Your Honor.
Don't be doing that now.
It's a very complicated bill, so we should hopefully be done in 5 minutes. 1595 deals with the titling of manufactured homes. And to my left is Mr. Mark Brunner. He's the president of the Manufactured Home Association, who I've worked with the last 3 years. And I'll just have him explain the bill briefly.
Mr. Brunner, is it?
Yes.
Would you identify yourself for the tape?
I'm Mark Brunner, president of the Manufactured Modular Home Association of Minnesota.
Excellent.
We're a trade association, have about 400 members, and are in Minnesota. We have 7 plants that build manufactured and modular homes. We also represent manufactured home communities, sales centers, lenders, and mortgage companies. And just a brief history on why the bill is necessary. And in 2005, U.S. Bank, at the behest of Freddie Mac, issued a memorandum nationally that, and Minnesota was like one of 10 affected states, that essentially said that any state that issues a title for a manufactured home that becomes real estate or is real property and financed with a conventional mortgage, and in the case of Minnesota, that's about 80% of the new manufactured homes that are built in the state are placed on real property and financed with a conventional mortgage. If the title is issued with that home, we will not finance those homes because there is a possibility that even though the title needed to be surrendered upon a fixation to real property, that it wouldn't be surrendered and somebody could take that title to a local bank and perhaps get a second mortgage on a home, placing the holder of the title in a priority lien position if there were a foreclosure. So in about 2 weeks' time, the legislature accommodated that issue, that concern, and we changed Minnesota law to require that no title is issued for a new manufactured home that's to be placed on real property and financed with a conventional mortgage. That worked very well. It's still working today. However, after 2007, when the foreclosure crisis hit, it became apparent that for any manufactured home that went into foreclosure, if the owner preferred to unaffix their manufactured home from the real estate and sell it separately, they weren't able to do it. The Department of Public Safety had determined that they didn't have the authority to issue a new title or an original title for that manufactured home, and requested of the industry that, you know, if that needs to happen, that we would need to give them the authority to accomplish that. That's what the bill does in the process. The bill was introduced last year, last session, over the summer. In the interim, we've worked with a number of the stakeholders, and at this point, we do have the support of the Minnesota Association of Realtors. We accommodated in the Commerce Committee last week an amendment that was agreed to by the department to address some of their concerns. We're aware that the bar and the Minnesota Title Association might have a technical tweak or two along the way. But essentially what the bill does is gives the department the authority to issue a title for a manufactured home when it's unaffixed from real estate.
Representative Murdoch, this bill came from Commerce. What were their comments there regarding some of these issues?
We didn't have any comments. Representative Nelson is on Commerce along with Representative Sanders. We presented the bill like this, and it passed unanimously. So it's a very complex bill.
I see that. I'm just trying to unpack how in the world DVS thinks they need $200,000 to accomplish not having people have to title their property. Did that come up at all? This is the Finance Committee. This is where this would be.
Let's see the fiscal.
Mr. Bruner can react to that.
I can't answer the specific question of how they came up with that amount, but I do know that the fiscal note was prepared before the bill was amended in the Commerce Committee, which essentially took a lot of the burden off the department to have to legally verify that the documents they were receiving were accurate.
Thank you. This is going to Ways and Means. I imagine this question will be asked there as well. And so I'm not going to push it any further, Mr. Committee. Representative Diskins.
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess I wouldn't mind a little explanation as to the fiscal note. Noting that DVS would need three new employees. One would be an office and administrative specialist senior position, another being a paralegal, and the third being an office services supervisor too, apparently to supervise the senior admin specialist and the paralegal. So I am a little curious as to especially that third person's role and responsibility.
Well, I'm getting curiouser and curiouser by the moment myself. So, Ms. McCormick, welcome to the committee. We're looking at the fiscal note that you and Mr. Fruin apparently put together. Can you explain to us briefly what's involved in this paperwork and why it's going to take three full-time equivalents to make something so simple, what appears to be simple? You can change my mind if you would like.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, Pat McCormick with Driver and Vehicle Services. As was stated previously, this fiscal note was written without the amendment that's been offered, and that did not provide us with any assurance that we would have any legal standing whatsoever to be able to unaffix the liens or the manufactured home title. And so that was the reason why we had a paralegal and other people, but it also involves a lot of processing, talking to banks. We have no one on our staff that understands real estate law. That isn't a requirement of ours. And so what we were talking about is bringing in people that understand real estate and law in order to be able to process this, with the working with our department legal counsel as well as with the stakeholders. We were able to come to this agreement so that we will have enough of an affidavit to be able for us to believe that we have what we need in order to legally proceed to unaffix the title.
Does that answer your question, Representative Biskins? No. Okay. The new fiscal note, as the bill's been amended, do you think that's going to be considerably less? Would that be a fair statement?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, even though we have not been asked to do a fiscal note, I requested that our staff look at this on Friday because I anticipated that this would be of concern to this committee.
Thank you.
And in looking at it, we still believe that we would need one position to be able to work on this issue. It's been a big drain on our title and registration staff. It is one of the reasons, only one of many, why we've had such a backlog in title and registration, because we are required to do these things when they've come to us and at least try to make efforts to try to work things out under the current process. And so this is something that would require one position, and that would bring the cost based on the fact that there would be some revenue that would come in, the revenue that DVS would take, because we do if the deputies take the transactions, we get no fees related to those. We process all the work in our division, and we believe about half of these transactions would be brought forward to deputy registrar's office. So we would only probably get about $3,000 in special revenue. So there would be, and this is just an estimate because we quickly did this at the end of the day on Friday, about $64,000 a year costs.
Okay. Thank you for the explanation. Representative Biskins, follow up.
Thank
No, Mr. Chair, I think you took care of it. Just is there going to be another fiscal note prepared?
Thank you. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, or Mr. Chair. Wrong committee. Question I have, and I guess similar to Representative Biskins with the it seemed outrageous, this number, and that's been explained. I guess my question, though, is how many of these do we anticipate, Representative Murdoch, a year, or Mr. Venner, how many weeks can spend a year this is going to happen? You know, if they take three people to do it, if it's only going to be 10 a year, if it's going to be hundreds per year, I mean, how many do we anticipate?
Well, I'll be honest, Mr. Chairman, Representative, I'll be honest with you, I hadn't anticipated there would be a large number. I mean, frankly, we tried to address this issue last session with the bill. Our office had received a few calls from some of our members who had actually purchased a manufactured home that was being unaffixed, and you know, a handful of them said, "Gee, we can't get a title. I can't sell it. You know, what do I do?" Which you know, brought us to introduce the bill to change the law. So in terms of large numbers, I'd have to defer to the departments in terms of where they came up with their estimates.
Cormick, on your fiscal note, it seems to indicate somewhere between 250 to 400 a year. Would that be helpful to Representative Nelson?
Mr. Chair and Representative Nelson, we are estimating about 500 per year. We right now, currently as of February 15th, have 98,170 manufactured home titles on our database.
Okay. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So you're saying 500 new ones. My understanding is that what we did with these in the past, if they're being affixed to real property, they're not issued a title. So you're saying there's going to be 500 of them per year that are going to be taken off unaffixed and need to get new titles? Or I don't see that happening, and I guess that's the question I'm asking. With how many are we looking that are going to be taken off of real estate and put into to be sold off as manufactured homes?
Ms. McCormick.
Mr. Chair and Representative Nelson, the supervisor that oversees this process said that the banks have told her there's quite a demand to unaffix. Mm-hmm. Wells Fargo had indicated verbally that there were several hundred homes in one region of the state that were ready to be unaffixed if this legislation passed.
So there could be some demand. Okay. Thank you. Anyone else in the audience feel compelled to testify about this bill? Seeing no one with the page moving, thank you for your testimony, and thank you for bringing the bill forward. Representative Murdoch, would you like to renew your motion to go to Ways and Means?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to renew the motion that 1595 be passed and sent on to Ways and Means.
The motion is before us. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. You're on your way to Ways and Means.
Thank you, members and Mr. Chair.
Members, the next bill I'm just going to do from right here. It's House Call 1971. We chatted about that last time. We got our fiscal note, and we got a clarifying amendment from Mr. Burris that actually helps make sure that the bill only does what we intended to do, which is allow existing contracts that have already been voted on, discussed, voted on, money encumbered, and contracts signed. This is the gist of the amendment. Mr. Burris, unless I'm missing something, I thank you for your clarifying language to make sure that the amendment does what I intended it to do. Would you care to delineate any further? Mr. Burris?
Mr. Chair, I can answer questions if
Mr.
there were.
Mr. Burris, let's ask it after I do the right thing. And actually, move 1971 off, lift off the table, move the bill back before us. So it's in front of us, and then members, I'm going to offer the A1 amendment to House File 1971, which recommends this bill be passed and be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. So it's in front of us, and members, I've offered the A1 amendment. The A1 amendment's up for discussion and description right now. Mr. Burris, thank you for your patience.
Mr. Chair and members, I might note three basic changes in the amendment. One, as you noted, is to essentially establish a ceiling on the amount of funds that can be used. And that really goes along with what was already in the law in the original bill on providing a contingent appropriation against contracts where there had already been an encumbrance of funds prior to the end of the budget biennium. There are two other changes I would note as well particularly standing out in the amendment. One is that the appropriation is limited under the delete all amendment to just the fiscal year that's commencing, so it's not an indefinite appropriation. And the second change is that there's a separate appropriation that's parallel that's made to the commissioner of MMB for the payroll, human resources, accounting costs that might be incurred with continuing these contracts.
Thank you for the description of the amendment. Members, this is appropriation for MMB, and the limitations are in line with what the special master has done twice in the last decade. Not only do the departments and the agencies get money appropriated for the purposes, but MMB apparently has to run the bookkeeping system to make sure everything lines up appropriately. So that's the gist of the amendment. Discussion to the amendment? Seeing none, let's vote. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. The House Bill 1971 is amended and is now before us on its way to Ways and Means. Is there anyone in the audience that feels compelled to testify to House Bill 1971? We had some testimony last time from AGC and our friends at the Transportation Alliance speaking in favor of the bill. I imagine that they're continuing to be in favor of the bill as amended. I see heads nodding in the affirmative in the audience. Members, any further questions or discussion? Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not opposed to doing this, and I'm not opposed to this concept. And, you know, that when we put our contractors and the people they employ at risk when we don't come to a agreement is not a good thing for the state and not a good thing for our contractors and our workforce in the state. But I guess I'm going to express concern. I know Speaker Swigum in the past has been opposed to continuing resolutions, and this is what this is. And I've seen one of these in another committee for another group of people that, you know, that other funds that wouldn't affect the general fund. And I'm just concerned that we're going to have more of these. I mean, it's putting government on autopilot. I mean, is this a preface to shutdown 2.0 that we're coming forward and that we're looking forward that we're going to have a problem again this year? I guess that's a concern I have. I mean, I it's not that I'm opposed to it, but I just have some concerns and I wanted to put those on tape.
Thank you. Duly noted. And Lord, I hope not shutdown 2.0. I don't want to live through that. Further questions or comments to the bill? Representative Hornstein.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I strongly agree with Representative Nelson's sentiments on this. I mean, we have one we've seen in GovOps, I think, on racing. I think there's another one floating around for parks. And I know House Research has done, a pamphlet or a flyer on continuing resolutions and, you know, throwing that out as a overall policy direction that we may want to take in the state. And that seems to me where this is heading, because if you do it just for one area, as Representative Nelson was saying, then, you know, we'll end up doing it for, you know, federal funds for education or health care. I mean, I think those are right around the corner. So we might as well just have a look at a comprehensive policy for how to do this. I mean, I support what you're doing, Mr. Chairman, but, you know, I think one way or the other, we shouldn't carve out these little exceptions and just, you know, my thought would be either do all or nothing. I mean, I mean, that's something that we ought to be thinking about moving forward the rest of the session. Because so far I've counted three carve-outs. We'll probably have a few more. I'm obviously very interested in making sure that our contractors and other stakeholders in transportation are taken care of. But, boy, when does it end is kind of my question here. So.
Well, thank you for your comments, and they are duly noted. This committee's attention is to the Transportation Department and its contractors, so we'll limit the scope of this one, but it helps gender that larger discussion you're speaking of. Way to go. Seeing no further discussion, let's vote. I renew my motion that this, Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I could have saved my comments for the next committee that this bill is going to, but I will just, for the members of this committee, a note that about two decades ago, the ratio of general fund revenue into the state to non-general fund revenue was approximately $9 to every dollar of non-general fund. Today, it's about $1 of general fund for every $1 of non-general fund. We spend about $33 to $34 billion a year or biennium in general fund revenue, but folks, it's about that same amount in non-general fund revenue nowadays. So if we are looking at this and we're only saying, but this is only for non-general fund revenue, it's still a very big issue we're going to have to grapple with sooner or later.
Thank you for your comments. Representative Beard renews his motion that 1971 as amended be recommended to pass, referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All in favor signify by aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The motion prevails. The bill is on its way to Ways and Means. Representative Abler, welcome to the committee. Members, we have two more brief ones, and I have heard both of the discussion on both these. I think they are actually technical in nature and pretty brief. I need a member to move House File 2114 for Representative Abler.
So moved.
Leidinger, Representative Leidinger moves that the bill is before us, and it's going to be laid over.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, the bills are not actually technical, and 6 minutes is fine to do both. We'll just kind of make our points. This is Dan Hansen. Is there a way to make this thing project pictures up, or does that take too long?
Well, we'd have to find a page that is technically qualified.
Just passing pictures around. Anyway, so given the short time, we're going to be short. We can make things fit the time we have.
Certainly.
The situation is this. Dan Hansen, my friend and fellow from Anoka District and a custodian and lives in Champlin, has a... Oh, you want to hold it? No, it's fine. This is just a prop. Has put on every year since 9/11, has had a very thoughtful event on the bridge over Highway 10 in Coon Rapids. It has grown in scope to include a giant fire truck. We'll see pictures of it. Hundreds of people coming over the course of the day to do a vigil. Last year, the 10th anniversary, somebody at MnDOT land decided that was not a good idea. We couldn't do that anymore, so we had to get the governor to weigh in to talk to Commissioner Sorrell to let us put our fire truck and have the people walk on the bridge again to honor our 9/11 memories, which I thought was ridiculous. And the whole project is almost in doubt that it could even happen pending this thing. And one of the MnDOT staff, I don't remember his name, said that was so gleeful that he was going to win this one. And so he didn't. And so the bill says that if a county or township or city who owns a bridge over a state highway wants to put banners and stuff up on there, they can. The departments could come and say they don't support it, and I don't blame them. They don't support anything. But I'm happy to work with them on language that does make sense. But I want to hear from Mr. Hansen, and it's going to be held over, so there's time to work on this.
Certainly.
So maybe listen to my witness testify for a minute, and then the department can nod their objection or come and say it, and I'll work with them in the meantime. So,
Mr. Hansen, welcome to the committee. If you identify yourself for the tape, we'd like to hear what you have to say.
Daniel Hansen. I live in Champlin, Minnesota. Thank you for this opportunity to speak, Mr. Chair, members. As Jim mentioned, for the last 6 years, actually, since 2006, when 9/11 fell on the same day of the week as the day that we were attacked in 2001, I decided then that I wanted to do something that patriotic Americans could come to, as well as firefighters, rescue workers, police officers, men and women from the military, and veterans. So I started this event in Coon Rapids on the County Road 14 bridge over Highway 10 just to honor our country and remember what happened to our country on that day, and to honor those men and women that serve. And I just want to take this opportunity to thank all those people here that have served, all the veterans here. Thank you for your service. But as Jim mentioned, last year on the 10th anniversary, I had a lot of hurdles to jump through, and with the MnDOT as well as Anoka County Highway Department, and Jim was able to go to the governor and see that we could actually have the fire trucks from the Coon Rapids Fire Department up on the bridge that day. So this is the banner here, and the printing on it is huge. I mean, it can be seen for a long distance. And it is safe. We have six people that actually hang this thing on the bridge, so there's no way that it's going to fall. And I would just like to be able to continue having this event on 9/11 each year, and this year, once again, it falls on a Tuesday, which is the same exact day of the week that we were attacked 11 years ago. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Hansen. I appreciate your testimony. Mr. Peterson, you have something to say about this, I'm sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, for the record, Scott Peterson from MnDOT. This is really the first time I'm starting to get some of the details about the particular situation that Representative Abler discussed, so I can't really represent the specifics of the decision that he referred to. But I do know that we have some serious concerns about the provisions of this bill. The regulations that MnDOT enforces in order to regulate signing along the trunk highway system are developed over a course of years with a lot of input and experience to protect the safety of the traveling public and the integrity of the state-owned infrastructure. And so, again, without being any more familiar with the specifics of this the case than I am, I can't really say anything further, but I had a brief conversation with Representative Abler before we sat down here, and I think we will certainly try to work something out with him to address his concerns.
Thank you. And to be clear, the bridge that this occurs on and that the bill sets up, those bridges are actually owned by another jurisdiction than MnDOT, correct?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And so I know the time is short, so just my final comment on this bill, and you can hold it over, and we'll work together on this, is that I understand MnDOT's need to protect the traveling public, and I also understand the need for common sense and let different events unfold. And we'll try to find a way to make those both compatible. So maybe you can hold that over and take up the next one, Mr. Chair.
Good. Thank you for that. Further questions or compelling comments? You just can't. Seeing none, we'll lay the bill over for possible inclusion somewhere. Representative Leidiger, you want to move House Bill 2115 also?
So move.
In front of the committee. Thank you. Representative Abler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is this is another ongoing challenge. If you happen to have an orphaned state highway through your district that nobody cares about, over time the striping gets goofy. This is, if I had more than a minute, I'd give you more details. Peterson's testimony will be identical on this bill. We're going to work on some things. But if the point is to make traffic flow through a jurisdiction in the least restrictive way, the people who live there often have some ideas that take a long time to go through MnDOT. I took 2 years to get them to lengthen a turn lane to include 7 cars instead of 3, and actually traffic flows better on this very stretch of highway. In the same way, if they could go straight as well as turn right up at the corner of Bunker and Highway 47, more cars could flow through instead of backing up a mile during rush hour. They back up so far, they actually go back onto Highway 10, right by Ferry Street by the 47 exit, which I think they're against that. That also impedes traffic flow when you're rear-ended at 70 miles an hour. Trying to get off the highway. And so we've done pretty well. We're stuck on this one, and maybe written a bit broadly for the sake of what should be done. But I tell you, every member in this committee has a highway in their district they wish they could do different, just the stripes of it, for free. And I'm one who understands the need for money and new construction. But sometimes if all you have is old construction, which is all it's ever going to be before it becomes a turnback, 20 years from now when 22 becomes a state highway going across the north side, then we're going to languish out there, and someone's going to die. And so that's my thoughts on it. And so I've had department staff out there, and they understand, and this will help them understand a bit more thoroughly. So that's the reason for the bill.
MnDOT has a marvelous new program called low-cost, high-impact projects. They've grown very fond of those, and the chair has tried to encourage that attitude at MnDOT. And I'm sure that Mr. Peterson will be hearing more about this and can convey that back up the food chain next door at DOT.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate that.
Tomorrow.
So 7 minutes, 2 bills. Thank you very much for your time. I appreciate
further
that.
Questions or comments for Representative Abler? Seeing none, members, thank you for your attention to these matters. Thank you for bringing them forward, Representative Abler. Wednesday, we will be in room basement, the basement hearing room, and we will start through bonding committee. With that, members, the committee is adjourned. Committee.